Dr. Norman Cornett, and he is a specialist in theology and culture, particularly theology and the arts. He has published in numerous Canadian and American magazines, as well as being guest professor in many North American and European universities. During his career, he has built a dialogical approach, which has become a research topic in Canadian, American, French, and German universities. He's published about Lionel Groll, his PhD subject. Professor Cornett's translations have been featured in reference library journals as the Canadian Literature Windsor Review, Ramplike Literary Review of Canada. And his main translation of Naim Catan's novel Farida, he directs jazz dialogical workshops. And he is also celebrated by scores of students who appreciate his unconventional yet powerful teaching methods. How are you this morning, Dr. Cornett? Nice to have you back.
Thank you very much, Zelda, and for this gracious invitation to Chin Radio. Well, it's hot and sweltering here in Montreal.
Yeah, but it'll cool down. I'm sure it'll cool down very, very shortly. Okay. So, you know, everywhere I turn when I try to find out more information about you, you know, I find discourse with regard to not so much the students that respect and love you, but the hierarchy that seems to have a problem with the freedom of speech. I know that you were at McGill University until 2007, and then you were dismissed. And I'm not really sure. Were you able to fight back and get your somewhat reputation back on track? What was the reason for that firing?
They have never given a reason, Zelda. It's 10 years now since that happened. I taught at that institution for 15 years, and it's been quite an experience since 2007, when that abruptly took place, until now. I have to say that I went from being a university professor in one small classroom in a little corner, though my classes were always full, so we had to increasingly ask for bigger and bigger classrooms, to the point now, Zelda, that the world is my classroom, because my dialogic philosophy of education has attracted a number of researchers in the field, for example, of education, but also in music and musicology. What I explore is how minds can how free thought takes place. To me, freedom of expression, academic freedom, free thinking, free thought, is the name of the game in higher education, because I believe that education takes place in that interstice between the professor and the student via the subject matter that we addressed in our courses.
You said the only answer that really counts is an honest answer. And I would say that what you were driving at, what you were hoping for, has all now come about. And we are seeing campus clashes, students battle over what constitutes freedom of speech. Some students say they are discriminated against for their unpopular or controversial opinions. Now, what is the reason that we go to college or that we go to a school of higher learning? Isn't it to learn different viewpoints so that we can get out there in the world and make decisions?
Indeed. In fact, when I give a seminar, recently I was invited to the University of Quebec in Montreal, because I also teach in French, for doctoral candidates. And they specifically invited me to introduce my dialogic approach so that they could explore with the doctoral candidates. This is a research team at the University of Quebec in Montreal. They could explore how does one create what I call a non-threatening environment so that we can own our beliefs, own our thinking. What struck me, in fact, that's the in Alanis Obomsawin's film, Professor Norman Cornett, the subtitle is, Since When Do We Divorce the Right Answer from an Honest Answer? And this, Zelda, goes to the heart of what you're asking here. What struck me was that again and again, the students were, no matter what their core beliefs are, they felt compelled to parrot the beliefs of the professor. And I, as a religious studies scholar, I said, now, wait a minute. This is putting the university student in an ethical and indeed a moral dilemma where they must separate, dichotomize, indeed divorce what they really believe, what they really think, from what the professor is presenting. And I said to myself, and the technical expression for this is cognitive acquisition. That's learning in the technical sense. So I'm always asking myself, how do we learn? How could we learn better? And I believe that the prerequisite for learning in university is that freedom to hold your core beliefs, to articulate your free thought, your free thinking, and to have the freedom to express this. You asked why does this get difficult in universities? When you give students that kind of freedom, it's for administrators, for bureaucrats, for those who want to control the discourse, this proves quite a challenge.
Well, women actually make up most of the group, which is confined to meeting in a tiny room that's more like a closet because the student unions refused to give the group official status, saying it was anti-feminist and would make female students feel unsafe. I'm reading from Campus Clash, Students Battle Over What Constitutes Free Speech. Mm-hmm. I don't understand. I kind of came to the university, this one person said, thinking it was a place where people could freely exchange ideas, push boundaries. But really, he said, it's a padded room where everyone is trying to control a message under the guise of making everyone safe, which is BS, honestly. So I don't understand what is happening. The campus now is really a difficult place to be. I know in many cases there's a lot of anti-Semitism, and maybe at Ryerson, now at McGill and other universities in Canada, people just sort of flee from class to class because they don't want to get involved in any kind of problems. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, now, mm-hmm. I never would believe that that would be a place of learning. What would you learn if you're not allowed or you're not being allowed to see both sides of an issue?
No, you're quite right. And the key word here that you've just articulated is controlled environment. But how can we learn if there is not freedom? And this is, I'll give you an example of how I... my modus operandi. You might recall that on September 9th, 2002, at that time, the former Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, was invited to Concordia University here in Montreal.
Right.
That led to what's now known as the Concordia riot. And here, Zelda, you and I have some common ground. I asked myself, as a scholar, as an academic, as a professor, with students of the same age in the same city, I said, how could this have happened? How could it be that, first of all, there was a riot? This seems to go against the spirit of Canada, particularly in Canadian universities. But second of all, that the former Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, was not even given the chance to speak. I said, what's wrong with this picture? So I believe that my endeavor in dialogic education is to effect a synthesis of theory and practice. So what I did is I saw the film that was made out of this called Discordia. I contacted its directors, Ben Adelman and Samir Malal, and I said, you know what, fellows, this film is going to the heart of an issue that it behooves every single campus in this country to address. So I said, would you be willing to face my students in a non-threatening environment where they come to terms with the issues you raise in your documentary? And they said yes. Well, when they said yes, I said, I'm going to invite the principal figures in the documentary. So I invited Noah Sarna, who was at the time the co-president of the Jewish Student Association, Hillel. I invited Aaron Matei, who was at the time vice president of the Student Council. I invited Eve Engler, also a vice president of the Student Council. And the Student Council played a key role. As you see in the film, I invited Samir Al-Trash, who was part of leading the movement to stop this. And then I invited the staff of Hillel in Montreal, and I invited a well-known lawyer. And I said, we need to have a free debate on academic freedom, freedom of expression, and how could this have happened? And could it happen here? And I did this very consciously, Zelda, because you know what? By opening up these issues and creating that, what I call, non-threatening environment, so that the students in my courses, could voice their core beliefs on these issues. Do you realize how empowering that is? And you asked me at the beginning, what is the purpose of higher education? I say this in all the conferences I give, whether in Europe or in the United States. I don't teach to give you a grade. I don't teach to give you a diploma. I teach to give you a life, so that when you leave the campus, what bookstore are you going to go to buy the book on how to live the rest of your life? The purpose of higher education is to learn to think for yourself, to become an informed citizen, and to be able to filter the true from the false, particularly as now we're dealing with the issue of alternative facts and false news. It behooves us to learn to think on our feet. Is this what we're really doing in higher education today?
Okay. Now, if you don't have someone who is teaching you how to think, I mean, you would think, Dr. Cornett, that we are born with a brain and we, you know, sort of get educated as we grow up and we know the difference between right or wrong. But we become parrots, parrots of our family, parrots of our what we read, and we're not able to discern and to make a decision that will say that's wrong. That's wrong for me. Now what we're getting is a group of people all mimicking the same rhetoric. And that is very dangerous. That's the Nazi era. What we're sheep. We're no longer.
Yeah, no, you're right on there, Zelda. And so this brings up another principle of my dialogic approach to education, to create what I call a no-fear zone. Why do students parrot? Because of the fear that if they say what they really think, if they say what they really believe, if they respect their core beliefs, their free thinking, they're going to pay an academic price in their grades, in their diplomas, in their letters of reference. How can academic freedom, freedom of expression, and free thought flourish in an environment of fear? So it has become my goal to demythologize, I put it, higher education. And this is the name of the game. If they're going to advance, in Elanis Obamsuin's film, Professor Norman Cornett, Since When Do We Divorce the Right Answer from an honest answer, you'll see my students with the premier of Quebec, at that time, Lucien Bouchard. You'll see my students with the Prime Minister of Canada, at the Right Honorable Paul Martin at that time. And what's key here is what we really should endeavor to do in higher education is to empower students to think for themselves, that they don't need to be afraid that if I disagree with the Premier of Quebec, and keep in mind, at the time, Lucien Bouchard was a leader for the sovereignty movement, and most of my students did not come from Quebec and did not necessarily subscribe to the sovereignty movement of Lucien Bouchard. But my perspective is we have to stop beating around the bush of political correctness and get down to brass tacks and talk turkey with the people, whether we agree with them or not.
Okay, but I want to sort of go back for a moment. When you were dismissed by McGill University, they didn't give you a reason. What happened to your reputation at that point? You were very able to find other work. You were loved and respected by your students, but didn't you have anyone on side who would have said, this is wrong, this is unfair? They just pushed you out the door and out you went?
Well, yeah, keep in mind that at that institution, there is no union for professors. Second of all, you talked about what I call the fear factor in higher education. Permit me to say, Zelda, on the on Chin Radio, the fear factor is also true for the professors. And when you have an institution that will act in such a way, that establishes a climate of fear throughout the academy, as much for the professors as it does for the students.
Did you not have professors on side? Because I'm sure that if they got you out, they're going to do the same to other professors in other classrooms. Did you have anybody on side?
Well, there are a number of open letters to the editor that were published in Le Devoir, which is the foremost French-language newspaper of Canada. There was an open letter written by professors, yes, and lawyers. There's a lot that is out there, but one has to keep in mind that universities have, and you're bringing up a very important dynamic, Zelda. What I call the dynamic between the institution and the individual. When an individual takes a stand in an institution, that immediately establishes a dynamic tension. But it's clear that the institution has the big end of the stick, because there are a lot of vested interests, Zelda, in each institution, including academic institutions. If the institution believes that their, quote, vested interests are at play here, then the institution can become quite heavy-handed.
Okay. I wanted to just read something from the Montreal Gazette, 2009, John Griffin. It said, good teachers are rare. Great teachers are a precious commodity. In Alanis Olmuswin's new feature documentary, Professor Norman Cornett is precious. So precious, she named the film after him with the telling tagline, since when do we divorce the right answer from an honest answer?
Well, you've done your research there, and actually that tagline is me. She's quoting me. You'll see me say that in the film, because I'm challenging the students to realize what is at the heart of higher education. Is it about quizzes, about midterms, about finals, about essays, about exams, about grades, and even about diplomas? Or is it about what matters in life? In other words, what's the bottom line in higher education? And I'll give you an example. I had a student, because you talked about the freedom and about parrots. This is an example I will never forget, Zelda. I had a student from South Asia, and who had come through the private school system and who was very, very concerned to respect the traditions, respect the workings of a North American university. And at the end of the semester, the student came up to me privately and said, "You know, Professor Cornett, when I walked into your classroom, I had, as a result of all my years of education, felt like a bird in a cage. And about halfway through the semester, I felt like the door of the cage was open."
Yeah.
And she says, "Now, at the end of the semester, I realize in your teaching, there is no cage. But Professor Cornett..."
What a compliment. What a compliment.
And then she ended, "But Professor Cornett, I also realize I had forgotten how to fly." I will never forget that, Zelda.
Well,
to have a student from South Asia who had gone through the British system, and then to realize, to give a student their wings again.
The point that we're all making is that we come here to learn and to argue and to be, and now we're seeing I think it's worse in the United States because it's very violent now, and there's really no allowability for people to have an opinion, and it's quite frightening to see how far we've come. Mm-hmm. Now, have you ever had an apology? Have you ever had someone from the from McGill say, "We're sorry"? Are there rules and regulations now even stricter than when you were there? What's the atmosphere there now?
Well, what it's at that institution now, I don't know. I do know that professors privately have spoken with me and expressed their concerns, expressed their regrets. At the same time, again, bringing in the dynamics of an institution and creating a conspiracy of silence, an environment of fear, this is alive and well. There is, and you're bringing it out, Zelda, there is a clear and present danger in higher education today that unless we kowtow to the parroting, to echoing what the vested interest want to hear, that we are going to gain the whole academic world but lose our souls.
Well, what we're seeing is a world that is trying to be controlled, okay,
mm-hmm.
by those who feel that they have the right to make those decisions. And in the situation in the United States with President Trump and the left, I've never seen anything where there is no concern for the bigger picture, for America, what America deserves or needs.
Mm-hmm.
And it all starts from your education system or lack thereof.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't have Norman Cornetts in these universities, what is the future?
Well, this is a telling question. Is the goal of the higher education to produce robots that are going to just fill certain slots in society? Or are we aiming for the bigger picture, for the improvement of society, where we create a welcoming environment? And I mean from preschool, Zelda, right through to the postdoc. What is the salient feature of the human condition? What distinguishes us from all other species on the planet? Well, I know from my work with neurologists and neuroscientists such as Professor Vijay Iyer at Harvard University, one of my dialogue partners, as well as his colleague, Professor Hans Tuchko, also at Harvard University, and Dr. Ivar Mendez, a world-renowned, and I'm I'm not exaggerating, a world-renowned neuroscientist, I know that what makes us, what sets us apart from all other beings on the planet, is creativity. You know, I love that beavers are wonderful creatures, excellent nature's engineers, but they always build their dams the same way. When you look at how human beings create homes, create shelters, create buildings, when you look at the built environment, there's no end to the possibilities. So it behooves us from preschool right through to the postdoc to create an environment that fosters, that nurtures, that encourages creativity, creative thinking, creative expression.
Professor Cornett, when my beloved dad passed away, I thought, and I know I was flying by the seat of my pants. I had a vision, not the same as his, but it was similar in how I wanted to express myself. He had given me the opportunity to be free, to mm-hmm. take chances mm-hmm. and to move forward. Mm-hmm. And nobody squelched that desire. And so even though I feel I'm still flying by the seat of my pants, I am definitely grounded. Okay, mm-hmm. but I mm-hmm. had that opportunity to be creative. What I see today is just like police state. People are not being allowed to fly.
Yeah, policing thought. And it's particularly appropriate, Zelda, that you mention your father today on Father's Day. I've just received two phone calls from my adult children. And this brings back, when I go to universities, whether in Europe or the United States, I make it clear that after our parents, no one has more impact on our lives than the teachers that we had, whether it be in preschool, right up to the postdoc. And so I mentioned to them, you know what, because I get invited to faculties of education, departments of education, and I say to those who are thinking of becoming elementary teachers or high school teachers or junior college teachers, I want to be honest with you folks, teaching is not a job, teaching is not an employment, teaching is not a career. Teaching is a vocation. It's a calling.
That's right.
And there is a sacred trust there. Just as though if you have somebody babysit your children or your grandchildren, when you entrust your children, there is a sacred dimension to it, and this is what strikes me as a religious studies scholar.
Professor Cornett, we're totally out of time, and it just seems as if we started, and I hope that in the future we will talk again. Happy Father's Day to you. Thank you so much for sharing your expertise. It's really a pleasure to have you on air. Thank you so much for being
with us. Thank you, Zelda, and to Chin Radio.
Take care.